The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
For reflections this morning, I'd like to talk about our perception of time from the lens of the Dharma. So there are a lot of different things I'm going to bring in together, but just to tell you, you know, oftentimes my talks, you know, given that my background, I've been trained as a scientist, is like bullet points and sub-bullet points. And then, so today is, might be more like a watercolor painting, I hope, in that spirit. We'll see how it goes. As much as a scientist can do watercolor painting. So we'll see. So what I'd like to do today is I'll be actually sharing some vignettes from this marvelous book called Einstein's Dreams. Anyone familiar with this book already? Yeah, a couple of people, yes. The enthusiastic thumbs up, yes. It's a lovely book. And I'll tell you how this comes in. Actually, well, let me tell you a little bit about a book now that I've introduced it. So it's written by Alan Lightman. Lightman, L-I-G-H-T-M-A-N. He's a physicist. Where's his bio? I think he was trained as an astrophysicist. Is that right? Yes, got PhD, blah, 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 blah. Theoretical physics. Anyway, so, and this book is vignettes of imaginary vignettes of what Einstein, and each little vignette is a page or two, inspired by Einstein's theories of time. And he's a lyrical writer, and as I was reading each of these, they brought up these Dharma reflections about our practice, because Dharma, we think of Dharma with capital D as the teachings of the Buddha, but with small d, the same word Dharma means the way things are, the natural law. And the natural law, the way things are, includes our perception of life, of reality, of ourselves, of this mind, within the context of time, the way we perceive time, which may not actually be what time is. In fact, according to many theories now, physics theories, there are multiple parallel universes where different versions of you live, different ideas. So thinking about it, it's like, whoa, okay. So there was another physicist I was just listening to on the radio the other day whose theories basically suggest that every moment you make a decision, another version of you, another world spawns off, and that it's almost like, what was that movie? Gwyneth Paltrow, I forget the name. Sliding Doors, that's the idea, Sliding Doors, where Gwyneth Paltrow misses the train or catches the train, and it's a split. It's a difference, and then the movie shows what if she catches the train, what life would be like, and if what she misses the train, what is life like? So, according to the theory of this scientist, every moment you make a decision, different versions of you spawn off in different worlds. So, but I'm going to pull us back. Okay, those are some reflections to say, okay, so the idea of reflecting of us in time with different ideas about time, and I'll make it a lot more concrete because this is now what I've presented is kind of out there. Okay, so I'm going to ground it a lot more in practice in a moment, but I'm just setting the space. So, and I also want to tell you, so this is all in the preamble. I'm still doing the preamble. I haven't got to the meat yet. The other part I want to say about the preamble is why I decided to, besides loving this book and just reflections coming up for me as I was reading it, I have been reflecting more and more on emptiness, on T. teaching emptiness in about 4 weeks, actually. Here I'm doing a day-long on emptiness. So I'm starting to sit and prepare my material, thinking more and more about emptiness, how to share, how to teach this material, because it's been a big part of my own practice. Emptiness pertaining to all phenomena, not just experience, but every phenomena is empty. As a freeing, not as a way to veer into nihilism. I think that's one potential danger of jumping into practices of emptiness without quite grokking them. But really the healthy way to work with it is a way of freeing up, is a way of freeing up this often prison that we make ourselves, taking everything to be so solid, both about our own experience and about what's happening, and this the tightness, the contractions that come up about taking things too real, too seriously. And emptiness creates this space of possibility, of openness, which can then be inhabited by meaning, by grace, by beauty. So it's not an empty emptiness, but it's a full, alive, divine, because there's so much more space when things are really empty. There's a lot more space for the beauty, for joy, for really experiencing the divinity of our experience. So jiggling and juggling. So my intention has been to jiggle and juggle those fixed notions of view. And the way that the reflections today about time relate to that bigger picture of emptiness is that it jiggles our perception of time, our perception of what we think is real. Not to disorient us, but to allow for more possibilities, to live more freely. Okay, does that make sense how these themes now kind of fit together? The theme of time fits more in freedom instead of contraction. Okay, yes? You're with me so far? Okay, that's the preamble. Okay, now with that, I'd like to, let's see, which one do I want to start with? I had them ordered, and then this morning I decided to unorder them. Yeah, maybe I'll start with this one. Yeah, this is a good one to start. Okay, so this one. And each chapter, it's interesting, they have a name, the title is a date. So the date on this one is 3rd of June, 1905. Imagine a world in which people live just one day. Either the rate of heartbeats and breathing is speeded up so that an entire lifetime is compressed to the space of one turn of the earth on its axis, or the rotation of the earth is slowed to such a slow gear that one complete revolution occupies a whole human lifetime. Either interpretation is valid. In either case, a man or woman sees one sunrise, one sunset. In this world, no one lives to witness the change of the season. A person born in December in any European country never sees the hyacinth, the lily, the aster, the cyclamen, the edelweiss, never sees the leaves of the maple turn red and gold, never hears the crickets or the warbles. A person born in December lives his life cold. Likewise, a person born in July never feels a snowflake on her cheeks, never sees the crystal on a frozen lake, never hears the squeak of boots in fresh snow. A person born in July lives her life warm. The variety of seasons is learned about in books. Imagine. Gets more interesting here. In this world in which a human life spans but a single day, people heed time like cats straining to hear sounds in the attic. for there is no time to lose. Birth, schooling, love affairs, marriage, profession, old age must all be fit within one transit of the sun, one modulation of light. When people pass on the street, they tip their hats and hurry on. When people meet at houses, they politely inquire of each other's health and then attend to their own affairs. When people gather at cafes, they nervously study the shifting of shadows and do not sit long. Time is too precious. A life is a moment in season. A life is one snowfall. One life is one autumn day. A life is the delicate, rapid edge of a closing door's shadow. A life is a brief movement of arms and legs. I'll read the last paragraph and then I'll comment and we can discuss, but just let it wash over you. When old age comes, whether in light or in darkness or in dark, a person discovers that they know no one. There hasn't been time. Parents have passed away at midday or midnight. Brothers and sisters have moved to distant cities to seize passing opportunities. Friends have changed with the changing angle of the sun. Houses, towns, jobs, lovers have all been planned to accommodate a life framed in one day. A person in old age knows no one. He talks to people, but he does not know them. His life is scattered in fragments of conversation, forgotten by fragments of people. His life is divided into hasty episodes, witnessed by few. He sits at his bedside table, listens to the sound of his running bath, and wonders whether anything exists out of his mind. Did the embrace from his mother really exist? Did that laughing rivalry with his school friend really exist? Did the first tingle of lovemaking really exist? Did his lover exist? Where are they now? As he sits at his bedside table, listening to the sound of his running bath, vaguely perceiving the change in the light. Oof. So much. So in a way, actually, I think what I appreciate, I mean, there's so many different aspects to us imagining if our lives were in a day, if we lived in one day. But then again, realizing actually one thing that he's doing very cleverly is to make it more accessible for us to realize how short our life really is. That's, I think, what the point of the story is. Because the same way that he talks about, oh, people in this world only read about seasons in books, we read about history in books. We don't long enough to know what the Depression era was like, what the World War was like. We know none of these. We read about them in books because really our life is a day in this long, big span. So to really appreciate our own mortality, the briefness of our life, because as human beings, we appreciate what a short life of a one day is. We grok it. But for us, 60, 70, 80 years, it's a long time. It isn't. It really isn't. To really appreciate the impermanence of our lives, it's really a day in the cosmic scheme. And also another aspect of the story that I appreciate is the hurrying on, the way people hurry on and by the time they're at old age, they don't know anyone. And they imagine, did it ever happen? Is it in our minds? And in some ways, we do that too in our society. We are so busy. We don't linger on. There's always the to-do list. There's always a to-do list. There's a next thing to do. There's a next thing to do. Next thing to do. I was overhearing yesterday as I was walking. There's a pool by the where I live. And There was this lady saying, talking to the other lady, oh, I meant to come when the sun was out, but I had the to-do list, I had to do laundry, I had to do this, I had to do that, and now it's cold, the sun is gone. So it's like, oh yeah, that's familiar. That's familiar. That's familiar. So reflections on our time being short and also how we choose to spend our time. So I want to pause and ask if there are any other reflections you'd like to share before I move on to other vignettes and other ideas and other things. Anything that comes up for you that you'd like to share about this reflection that really lands for you? Yeah.
I've noticed in sitting meditation, I don't go into jhanas. My mind proliferates. Maybe then toward the end of a sitting period, I realize, oh, I haven't focused yet during this sit. And I make a little more effort. And that last minute, even though my body is a little jumpy or agitated, not comfortable with being still. But, and so it's not necessarily pleasant. But because I'm really noticing every moment, that last minute can seem like a very, very long time.
Interesting, yes, or the perception of time, yeah.
And so even though in a way it's not pleasant,
right,
just the fact that I'm noticing,
right,
noticing,
yeah,
is exquisite. Great.
Yeah, different perceptions of time. Yeah.
And I've been on, when I go on a retreat, I don't know why this doesn't happen other days, but on the first full day, you get up at 5:30, you're up till 9. And even though my mind isn't really very focused as a rule, still, I'm noticing more than I usually do. That day can seem like a week and a half or 2 weeks.
Yeah,
so you know,
absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's How many people could relate to an experience of different perceptions of time? It's interesting, right? It's not.
I think what we're noticing is that we're alive, and that's what's part of what's great. Part
many
of it.
Different. Yeah. Thank you for that. So I'm gonna move on to the other reflections. Thank you, because it's bringing up a lot of different ideas now. Okay, so. Ready for another one?
Sure.
Okay. Here we go. So this one. Oh, this is good. Okay. This is very good. Okay, so this world is a world without memory. And actually, I was reminded of this one when my bio was being read. I think it's you'll see why in a moment. I was listening to it as if I had no memory. Like, wow, this is interesting. This is this person. Wow, I'm sitting here, kind of like, you know, achy, but like, oh, that person, like, interesting person. Here we go. A world without memory is a world of the present. The past exists only in books and documents. In order to know oneself, each person carries one's own book of life, which is filled with the history of their life. By reading its pages daily, one can relearn the identity of their parents, whether they were born high or born low, whether they did well or did poorly in school, whether they had accomplishments, had accomplished anything in life. Without one's book of life, a person is a snapshot, a two-dimensional image, a ghost. In the leafy cafes on the Brunngeschalde, one hears anguished shrieks from a man who just read that he once killed another man, sighs from a woman who just discovered she was courted by a prince, sudden boasting from a woman who has learned that she received top honors from her university 10 years prior. Some pass the twilight hours at their tables reading from their books of life. Others frantically fill its extra pages with the day's events. With time, each person's book of life thickens until it cannot be read in its entirety. Then comes a choice. Elderly men and women may read the early pages to know themselves as youths, or they may read the end to know themselves in later years. Some have stopped reading altogether. They have abandoned the past. They have decided that it matters not if yesterday they were rich or poor, educated or ignorant, proud or humble, in love or empty-hearted. No more than it matters how a soft wind gets into their hair. Such people look you directly in the eye and grip your hand firmly. Such people walk with the limber stride of their youth. Such people have learned how to live in the world without memory. Wow. So imagine the world without memory. Imagine if there wasn't a past, so living in the present. In a way, that's sometimes what we invite in the practice of meditation, to be in the present, let go of the past. But then, it actually, I think the more radical teaching of the Buddha is to let go of the past, to let go of the future, and to let go of the present. Ah, that part we usually don't teach, or we don't emphasize, or maybe people miss. Maybe we do teach it, but people miss. So why is that? What is that about? So one thing that also tends to happen, I think, in mindfulness practice and Vipassana practice is people tend to value the present moment as God, the present. It's all about being in the present. It's all about being in the present. Or as the Buddha says, let go of the present. The present too is empty. The present too is completely empty. It only serves as a doorway to realizing that everything else is empty and everything else is light and held with lots of lightness. Present moment itself doesn't need be put on the pedestal. It's just a doorway. Do you take the window or a door of your house and put it on the pedestal and worship it? No. It's just a doorway to get outside, to wake up, to go out and play. So the present moment too is a doorway. So, living life without a memory. So as I read these reflections, the invitation I have for you in these different worlds is to pick one. As I go through them, I'll share one or two more. And for you to experiment today as you go about your life and see if you let go of memory. What would it be like if you imagined your life would end today? This is the last day of your life. It's the two we have covered so far. I'd like to offer a couple more. You up for it? Yeah, okay, a couple more reflections. Okay, so this is, so this is the opposite. So the one, I just read, the world without memory. This other world is about being stuck in the past. And this is quite relevant, actually. So here we go. So in this world, different parts of this world, different parts of town are stuck in a different part of history, and different people too. So I'll skip the part about the town itself and just run into about the history. Let's see. Oh yes. Okay. Yes. Okay. So the same way that, right. So portions of towns become stuck in some moment in history and do not get out. So to individual people become stuck in some point in their lives and do not get free. Just now a man in one of the houses below the mountains is talking to a friend. He's talking of his school days at the gymnasium. His certificates of excellence in mathematics and history hang on the walls. His sporting medals and trophies occupy the bookshelves. Here on the table is a photograph of him as the captain of the fencing team, embracing the other young men who have since gone to university, become engineers and bankers, gotten married. There in the dresser, his clothes from 20 years, the fencing blouse, the tweed pants now close around the waist. The friend who has been trying for years to introduce the man to other friends nods courteously, struggles silently to breathe in the tiny room. In another house, a woman looks fondly at a photograph of her son, young and smiling and bright. She writes to him at a long-defunct address, imagines the happy letters back. When her son knocks at the door, she does not answer. When her son, with his puffy face and glassy eyes, calls up to her window for money, she does not hear him. When her son, with his stumbling walk, leaves notes for her, begging to see her, she throws out the notes unopened. When her son stands in the night outside her house, she goes to bed early. In the morning, she looks at his photograph, writes adoring letters to a long-defunct address. The tragedy of this world is that no one is happy. Whether stuck in a time of pain or of joy, the tragedy of this world is that everyone is alone. For a life in the past cannot be shared with the present. Each person who gets stuck in time gets stuck alone. Whew. That's profound. I love this perspective. Are there ways in which you are stuck in time? Are there ways, maybe not all the time every day, but are there ways in which there is an identity from the past that you're stuck to? I am this. I am a survivor of X, or I'm that. Not to say that events don't affect us and don't change us. But do we continue to define ourselves based on that moment, that one thing that happened at some point in the past, being stuck in the past? We're so much more magnificent beings. So to define ourselves just as a moment in time, something that happened. And many times it might be much more, and so if something that happened to us, to see the identity and let go, and if something that perhaps we did unskillfully, instead of self-flagellating and saying, why did I do this? Why didn't I not do that? And going through the cases over, you know, analyzing it over and over again, maybe forgiving ourselves and moving on and not being stuck in that moment in the past, letting it define us, letting it define every moment in the future. So that's another invitation I have for you. To see if you are stuck. Again, not entirely, I love how he makes caricatures of these people so that we really get it, we really grok it. But are there events in your past, moments in your past that you're stuck in? And there's a loneliness because those moments in the past cannot be shared with anyone. You're stuck in them, in the whirlpool of this moment in the past. To offer another one, there's time, another reflection. As I said, this is watercolor today, so lots of different colors for you. Oh, yes, okay. Do page 18. Here. Okay. So in this world, this is an interesting one. In this world, there are two different types of time. There is the body time, and there is the mechanical time. In this world, there are two times. There is a mechanical time. And there is body time. The first is as rigid and metallic as a massive pendulum of iron that swings back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. The second squirms and wriggles like a bluefish in a bay. The first is unyielding, predetermined. The second makes up its mind as it goes along. Many are convinced that mechanical time does not exist. When they pass the giant clock on the Kamgasa, they do not see it, nor do they hear its chimes. While sending packages or strolling between flowers, they wear watches on their wrists not only as ornaments, or only as ornaments, as courtesies to those who would give them timepieces as gifts. They do not keep clocks in their houses. Instead, they listen to their heartbeats. They feel the rhythm of their moods and desires. Such people eat when they're hungry, go to their jobs at the millinery or the chemist whenever they wake from their sleep. Such people laugh at the thought of mechanical time. They know what time moves in fits and starts. They know the time struggles forward with a weight on its back when they are rushing an injured child to the hospital or bearing the gaze of a neighbor wronged. Then there are those who think their bodies don't exist. Do you know any people like that? They live by mechanical time. They rise at 7 o'clock in the morning. They eat their lunch at noon and their supper at 6. They arrive at their appointments on time, precisely by the clock. They work 40 hours a week, read the Sunday paper on Sunday, play chess on Tuesday nights. When their stomach growls, they look at their watch to see if it's time to eat. When they begin to lose themselves in a concert, they look at the clock above the stage to see when will it be time to go home. They know that the body is not a thing of wild magic, but a collection of chemicals, tissues, and nerve impulses. Thoughts are no more than electrical surges in the brain. Sadness no more than a bit of acid transfixed in the cerebellum. In short, the body is a machine, subject to the same laws of electricity and mechanics as an electron or clock. As such, the body must be addressed in the language of physics. And if the body speaks, it is speaking only of so many levers and forces. The body is a thing to be ordered, not obeyed. So, appreciate this reflection also, in a way, turning it around again with respect to time, as if there are two different times, and which one do you obey? So, as I was reflecting on this myself, I think there is the, you know, there are these two truths. And in some ways, another way to see that there is the internal time that we have, there is the body time, and there is the external time. You know, time is passing. We have 6 more minutes left this morning. This Dharma talk and conversations. It's just passing along. And yeah, it's like, oh, wow, is it really? Like, what happened? Or maybe it felt like forever. I don't know. So I think I think in his writing, sometimes he's ridiculing a little bit the people who live by the external time. At least that's my impression. And yet, I think what is really important and wise in terms of our living, in terms of living our lived human life, is to appreciate that there are these two times. And to notice our tendencies. What is our tendency? To recognize our tendency. Are we in the first group? Or are we in the second group? Do we sit and meditate whenever we feel like it? And if we don't feel like it might never happen, oh, the last time I sat was 2 years ago because I haven't felt like it, and you know. Or do we, for example, sit every day at 5 a.m. in the morning for a whole hour, whether or not we're in pain or tired or sleep deprived, or we just do it because that's the time. And not just for our sitting practice, but for all the other aspects of our lives. So knowing what our tendency is, and then I think wisdom comes to actually working with both wisely, not just one over the other. And learning, if we have the tendency to always just do things as we're called for. Well, maybe bringing a little more structure, living a little more according to external time, just a little more, pushing our edge. If we are the type that tends to live mainly according to external time, I should do this, I should do that timetable, loosening it up, listening to our internal body time. Well, I'm supposed to do this now, but I actually really don't feel like it. What does this body need right now? What is this body saying? If I listen to my body, there is so much wisdom in the body. But not completely, right? So really finding the balance, the wisdom between both of those. When I teach meditation retreats, especially for beginners, we tell people to give yourself to the schedule. You know, sit, walk, whatever the schedule says. Do what the schedule says. And yet, if you're tired, take a nap in the afternoon. So it's like, wait, what did you just say? You said, give yourself to the schedule. You said, if you're tired, listen to your body and take a nap in the afternoon. Absolutely, both. Both, give yourself to the schedule and listen to your body. If you're tired, take a nap. Go for a walk. Do what your body needs. So both and. There's a wisdom, so much wisdom in both of those. And similarly, as I work individually with people, if there's a lot of, you know, rigidity, for example, they're sitting all the time and they're not liking their practice anymore. They have a lot of aversion to their sitting practice. They do it because they should, because they have to, because it's good for them, because they have this goal. And I say, don't. A Dharma teacher says, don't sit. But seriously, don't. Don't do that. If it's such a should, if it's bringing so much aversion. And then instead, again, it's one by one, person by person basis, but listen to your body. If in the middle of the day, you're really exhausted and your mind is just... you want to break from all the busyness and all the people and everything. Great, that's the time. Listen to your body. That's the time to go and sit. Maybe even go to the bathroom for 2 minutes if you're at work and just sit for 2 minutes in the toilet stall, right? But that's when you're really listening to your body, then you can fall in love again with your practice. You can fall in love again with your practice that way, little by little by little, and then bringing it back to your daily life of sitting. Okay, then 6 a.m., 5 a.m., I'm supposed to sit. This morning, actually, no, I'm really tired. I want to sleep more. Don't worry, you're not going to become a couch potato. But respecting, honoring, yet, if every morning, for a whole month, you've got up and said, no, I want to just, well, then maybe you want to tighten it up a little bit and work according to and practice or live more according to the external time. So really, so it's 10:43. Speaking of time. And what I want to say in the last minute left really is... again, the invitation to take one of these reflections today and play around with them, and whichever one really spoke to you. And also to remember, maybe taking this reflection home, that the same way that characters in a play, they're given a role to play. They're given a character, and the time of the play is defined. It's 3 hours. There's an intermission. Maybe it's set in a particular time, and then maybe between first act and second act, 10 years pass or whatever. The time is kind of imaginal. It's imagined. Your life, you are a character in your own play, in this play. Actually, it's not your own play. It's in a play. You are given a role. You didn't choose your parents. Your body, your mind, you didn't choose any of this. You're a character in a play. So playing your part the best you can with joy, with delight, loving it. It's not going to last. It's a limited play. It's a day, it's 3 hours, it's however long it is, this construct of time, which we think it's always the present, it's always now. But then again, anyway, that's another topic, I won't get there. So anyway, I hope reflections today were of some use to your practice, to your life, to your growth. May you all be happy. May you all be well. And let's dedicate the merit of our sitting and our reflection together. May all beings everywhere be happy. May all beings everywhere be free. Thank you for your kind attention.